Chapter 27, Babylon. Roy blinked awake, instinct screaming in alarm as a dull, hollow roar pressed down on his ears. Instinctively, he reached out for Ed, following some ingrained need to pull him close and to make sure he was safe. But the bed was empty, rippled with dancing shadows as the curtains swayed and the windows rattled. Ed? No answer. And Roy swore as something in the bathroom fell into the sink with a crash. The sparse furniture juddered as if possessed, and the light swung overhead like a pendulum. The noise worked its way through his skin, making his ribs shudder as his fingers knotted in the sheets, hanging on as he tried to understand what was happening. Earthquake. It had to be, although he had never experienced one as strong as this, and never in Central. Near the mountains, tremors were a weekly event, but this city was on stable ground. The sudden buck and writhe of the earth beneath its foundations could very well reduce the entire region to nothing but rubble, and Roy winced as the stonework around him groaned as if in pain. Eventually, the noise began to die away, receding to leave shocked silence in its wake. Voices called out, confused and uncertain. Outside the windows, the floodlights blanked out the soft glow of the street lamps as they flashed into dazzling life. There were running footsteps as sentries scurried around, trying to assess any damage and understand what had just happened. Roy struggled up from the bed, glancing at the walls and feeling a jolt of relief that there were no obvious cracks. Wrapping the sheet around his waist, he opened the bathroom door, his frown taking on a worried edge when Ed was nowhere to be found. Where the hell was he? Glancing back out into the room, he saw a scrap of paper, and there was no mistaking the stumbling, awkward handwriting. Snatching it from the table, he read through the brief missive, and the sheer lack of information made Roy feel sick to his stomach. Ed had promised he would not go and find Carmine alone, but it had not exactly been an iron-strong oath. He had not even put it into words, just nodded his head while his eyes were heavy with something like guilt. A clammy realization insinuated itself into Roy's mind. The earthquake was not natural. It was either a result of the loss of the gate, or Ed had done something to start it. Perhaps he had set out with no intention of finding Carmine, but she could always have tracked him down. Was he out there, somewhere in the rain, fighting her and the thing within him all at once? With another curse, he looked around, dithering as he tried to think of the best course of action. He had to find Ed, but he could hardly chase him down dressed only in a bedsheet. Quickly, he turned to the bathroom, letting the fabric fall to the floor and stripping off the bandage around his waist before flicking on the taps and standing under the cold spray of the shower. He only stayed there for a few seconds, long enough to wash away the scent of sex and anxious sweat before he stepped out again, barely bothering to dry himself off as he grabbed spare underwear from the drawer beside the bed and struggled into his trousers. Reaching for his jacket, he shrugged it on, doing up the buttons to hide the fact he didn't have a shirt. He would find one when he had a moment. For now, there were more important things to do. He had to find Ed. Grabbing his gloves, he slipped them on, feeling the basic comfort of the cloth against his skin. Without them, he felt naked, somehow, as if the title Flame Alchemist was bonded to the fabric. More than anything right now, he needed to feel as if he had some power over this situation. Even if it was nothing more than a shallow lie, it did wonders for his confidence. Roy felt helpless, but Brigadier General Mustang did not know the meaning of the word. Someone knocked on the door, a frantic, rapid beat that made him look up sharply as Hugh's words echoed through the wood. "Roy, are you in there?" Mace's voice was rough with sleep and edged with stress, and the rhythm repeated itself, louder this time. "Roy!" "Here," he called back, striding over to the door and pulling it open. I need to get to the library. Ed's wandered off, and I think that earthquake had something to do with him. You can't, Hughes said, too anxious to be anything but blunt. All soldiers and alchemists are confined to base while plans for emergency procedures are put together. Hakuro's orders. What? That's not how this works. He scowled as he tried to absorb the new information. Management of emergencies are left to the discretion of commanding officers. We help where we're needed. That's the way it has always been. Who's putting the plans together? Roy saw the expression on Mace's face and shook his head in disbelief. Hakuro? He's the Führer, Hughes said, adding quietly, what he says goes, even if he is inept. An order is an order, Roy. I need to find Ed. I don't give a shit what Hakuro says. Mace's hand snatched at his sleeve, pulling him up short with a little shake. Roy, emergency statutes have already been implemented. You know what that means. Hugh's lips were pulled into a straight, flat line, and his eyes were deadly serious behind his glasses. It means no trial for anyone who disobeys. If you walk out of here, then it'll end with both you and Ed against a wall in front of a firing squad, and no one will be able to defend you. Roy prized his friend's fingers loose, gritting his teeth in frustration as he tried to think. Hughes was right, and Hakuro would not even hesitate to shoot anyone who could be considered a dissident. Roy was powerless, and even his rank of Brigadier General would not protect him, let alone Ed. He had to stop and think. There was a way around this. There had to be. General Stott will already be on his way, he said, speaking with care as Hughes raised an eyebrow. It will take him a while yet, but when he arrives, I need you to request an urgent meeting on my behalf. Mace looked at him, green eyes sharp as he tried to follow Roy's train of thought. Stott's in direct command of you, isn't he? Strict on military rules. Likes things done by the book? Exactly. What Hakuro's doing is not in any book the military has ever read. Stott will hate it. I can use that to give us the freedom of movement we're going to need. What about Ed? Roy closed his eyes and swallowed tight. I'll wait 1 hour. If he's not back by then, I'll think of something. He smiled weakly at Hugh's expression of pained pity, trying to ignore his own desperate need to leave now and find Ed. Get everyone together in the office. We need to be prepared. For what? The end of this mess, whichever way it goes. Hughes nodded in understanding, his face pale and anxious as he strode off to complete Roy's requests. If anyone could get things done competently and quickly, it was Mace, and Roy trusted him to make sure that Stott would find the time for a meeting. More often than not, his superior officers were more like annoyances than allies, but some generals had their uses. The office was a haven of calm, but even within its walls there were signs of disarray. Papers had been dislodged from the desks, and someone's mug had fallen from the shelf and smashed into jagged pieces on the floor. The cupboard doors had been shaken open to hang as wide as a bird's spread wings, while the filing cabinets showed drab glimpses of plain brown folders within their drawers. With a sigh, he walked over to one of the bigger cupboards and grabbed a uniform shirt that was folded neatly in its confines. It did not take long to put it on, and, although it was still stiff with starch, it was better than the chafe of his jacket against his bare skin. Hastily, he grabbed a black pen and filled in the scuff on his left boot. There was no time for a full inspection now, but any obvious uniform infractions would only turn General Stott cold and distant. Roy needed the man to see things from his point of view, not get caught up with fastidious demands for perfection. The outer door jerked open as Breida, Havoc, Fallman, and Fury staggered in, followed at a more sedate pace by Hughes. They were all wearing the jittery expressions of men torn abruptly from sleep, but they stood to attention as they waited for Roy's instructions. He skimmed eyes along the line, checking each of them over with his usual care as he considered his options. Breida, I need you to check over the existing plans for emergency procedures. See if any clause was included that would allow us to overrule general orders from the Führer. Fallman, try and get this office cleared up. Fury, I need you to call down to the communications base and check that they don't need your help with repairs. If they're all right, then help Brita. Havoc? He hesitated, noticing the stiff way the lieutenant was moving his arm and the deep shadows under his eyes. Are you fit for duty? Jean nodded, rolling his shoulder experimentally before giving a shrug. The paramedic said my arm wasn't that bad, but it hurts like a bitch, sir. Can you still shoot a gun? The question was completely serious, and Havoc narrowed his eyes in consideration, before giving one firm nod. If I have to, it won't be a problem. I might not be as good as Hawkeye, but I can manage. Roy nodded, trying to bully his tired thoughts into line. For now, just find some coffee and see if you can get hold of some breakfast for everyone. It's going to be a long day, and don't expect to be going home tonight either. There were no groans from his men. They knew better than that. The army did not believe in paying overtime, but nor was there any such thing as regular hours. They all knew that Roy would not ask them to work late without good reason, and they understood enough of what was happening to realize that it was serious. He would have to tell them all of what he knew sooner rather than later. He was not the kind of man who expected blind loyalty from those under his command. They were sure and steady by his side because he respected their intelligence and explained his reasons. He was not about to change that now. Absently, he leant on the doorframe to his inner office as they got to work. He was not even watching them, but staring at some point in the middle distance, lost in thought. He felt like a rope pulled too tight, and he had no doubt that the strain was starting to show. He wanted action, not this pointless, petty sit-and-wait game. If it were not for Ed, he may have accepted Hakuro's idiocy with a little more good grace. But Edward was out there somewhere, and Roy itched with the need to have him in his sights where he could at least try and keep him safe. Not that he would appreciate it. Protectiveness would just infuriate Ed. It was not like he was unable to take care of himself, after all. Staring out of the window at the bright parade ground, he frowned at the silver rain as it plunged down. He had gained perhaps another hour and a half of sleep before the earthquake rattled him from slumber. Had Ed stayed after he drifted off? How long did it take to get a library book anyway? Surely no more than half an hour. Where the hell was he? Havoc had given up on finding the necessary components for coffee in the office and muttered something about going to pilfer stuff from the canteen. He absently placed a cigarette between his lips as he strode across the floor, probably more for comfort than because he needed a smoke, and pulled the door open. Roy's senses swam back into startling focus as he saw Ed standing on the threshold, a small book open in his flesh hand. He looked up at Jean with a faintly bemused expression. Eventually, Havoc stood to one side, watching Ed pass with a flicker of uncertainty in his eyes before he stepped out and closed the door behind him. Warm relief flooded through Roy's body, unwinding the knots of tension that had held him tight in their coiled grip. Close on its heels came anger, petty and scathing. He had been more worried than he cared to admit, overwhelmed and crippled by the clawing fear that Ed was in danger. Despite each assurance and every carefully laid foundation of trust, Ed had still excluded him, leaving him behind to watch and wait, helpless. It was a knee-jerk reaction to attack, to somehow punish Ed for being the cause of so much concern, and his emotions were barely hidden behind his words when he spoke. "Is there anything you need to tell me?" he asked quietly, not taking his eyes off of Ed's face. "Your note was not particularly informative." Of course Ed heard what he was not saying, stripping away the cool pretense of indifference to show the truth of Roy's feelings, and he stiffened at the unspoken accusations and fears that Roy was trying to keep inside. Gold eyes narrowed, and he swiped a hand through the curtain of his wet hair, burnished to dark gold by the rain. "Thought I would save us some time and grab this from the library," he muttered, his tone neither apologetic nor deferential. "I would have been there and back in 20 minutes, but I got held up." There was something in those simple words, a deeper layer of meaning that made the hairs on the back of Roy's neck prickle in alarm. Swiftly, he let his eyes wander over Ed's frame again, reevaluating his appearance for sign of weakness or harm. There were no bruises or cuts, nothing to indicate he had been in any danger, but the gate healed everything before it became an issue. Ed could have had a knife between his ribs and there would probably be no evidence of it. His clothes were dark with water, but there were no obvious tears or gashes in the fabric. Only the resignation in Ed's eyes gave anything away, and Roy gritted his teeth as he clung stubbornly to his anger, forcing himself not to close the distance and reach out. He wanted to touch Ed, because they communicated better that way. Words became a tangled mess, but a kiss was straightforward and guileless. He desperately needed the truth, and all he was getting from Ed were hesitant, resentful explanations that told him nothing at all. "You're not to go anywhere alone. That was never a request, Full Metal. That was an order." Ed opened his lips to snap a response, but something held him back, and Roy raised an eyebrow as he found himself on the receiving end of a gaze that saw far too much. Grudgingly, Ed's body language shifted from aggressive to passive. His shoulders were still straight and sure, but his stance was relaxed and his head was lifted slightly, exposing the column of his throat as he continued to watch Roy, reading him with uncomfortable ease. When he spoke, his voice was calm and smooth, but not without feeling. "We don't have time to waste, and everyone's sleep was too important to disturb." Ed grimaced, shifting his shoulders in an uncomfortable shrug. It was enough, a regretful movement that Roy knew would be his only apology. "Sometimes I have to disobey orders. I didn't go anywhere else except the library." It was the truth. Roy could see that. Ed was not capable of deception. He hid behind evasion and feigned ignorance, but he had never been able to look Roy in the eye and give voice to a blatant lie. Ed had not intended to go and find Carmine. Not this time. Roy glanced away as he gave the tiniest nod of acceptance, just enough to let Ed know that he understood his reasons. "What held you up?" he asked softly, ignoring the rattle of the door as Havoc returned with a coffee pot in hand. "I wasn't the only one there. Remember the things Carmine had with her at Ryder's?" He could hardly forget. The woman may have been the true threat, but her shambling company had brought an element of horror to the assault. Humans could fight and live and die, victorious or defeated. But the rag-bundled creatures at her side had made his skin crawl. Reanimated corpses. The office stilled. Roy sensed his men's uncertainty like ripples through a pool of calm water. Every eye was on them, but it was Havoc's stammer of fear that made Ed look to the side, a hint of exasperation crossing his features before he squashed it, explaining to Jean exactly what Carmine had been doing. Edward was always startlingly honest, his face an open book of expression, and that frankness was exactly what Havoc needed. There was horror and fear written across Ed's features, but drowning them out like the sun fighting shadows was utter determination. There was more reassurance in that than anything Roy could have said. "She's making more," Ed said flatly, turning back to Roy. "There were at least a dozen in the library. The others disappeared when the earthquake started." Roy straightened up, rubbing his fingertips together as he took in this latest piece of news. The creatures had been easily dispatched with a bout of flame, but they were an unknown factor to the equation of his strategy. How much of a force were they up against? A gang or an army? Had the earthquake destroyed them, or were they simply hiding in the gloom, regrouping as the city struggled to cope with the churning ground beneath its foundations? "The earthquake," he asked, carefully editing all accusation and doubt from his voice, speaking to Ed without inflection. "Was that something to do with you?" Ed ducked his head, not meeting his eyes as he perched on one of the desks and flicked the book open again, skimming through the pages as if the hush of the paper was a reassuring thing. "No, it's what Kalea warned you about. Amstris is starting to suffer the strain. It'll just keep getting worse until there's nothing left." "Unless you rebuild the gate. If you manage that, then the disasters will stop, won't they?" Hughes's voice was confident, and Roy knew he was trying to act as a bridge between the alchemists and the soldiers, trying to reduce the growing feeling of hopelessness by pointing out the ultimate goal. He was also making it known, in his own way, that Roy had to act as a commander, not just an alchemist. If he wanted his men to fight, then he needed to give them a proper explanation. Their confusion was a tangible thing, but Breida's blunt question of, "What gate?" made Ed flinch. It was almost imperceptible, but Roy was watching for it, waiting for him to look up and meet his eyes. When he did, there was an element of resignation there. Ed understood that the others had to know the full of it. Whatever they thought of him once they had the full story, whether they feared him or supported him, was not of any real importance. Roy knew him well enough to see that he would never let them walk blindly in his wake. He wanted them to understand it all, cause and consequence, before dedicating themselves to the fight. Fury's voice interrupted Roy's thoughts, reporting that Lieutenant Hawkeye was on her way with Al and the Tringhams in tow. He could not help but feel a tinge of relief that Risa would be part of this. Of all his men, she was the most level-headed and unshakable. She trusted in her guns and her common sense, and she would face any enemy, no matter how strange, with nothing but strength in her eyes. With a nod of acknowledgement, he looked around the room, taking in the taut, tense atmosphere. He wanted to sigh, but held it in. No one here was being tiresome. They each had their own fears and questions, and they had a right to be heard. "As soon as Lieutenant Hawkeye gets here, I will debrief you on what's been happening." He stopped for a second before offering a trace of reassurance. "You know some of it already, but you will need to be in possession of all the facts before you can act." "Is it something to do with alchemy, sir?" Fellman asked. "It's everything to do with alchemy, but it's not just the alchemists who are going to suffer," Ed replied, cutting in before Roy had the chance to speak, his voice clear and doubtless as he drummed his fingers on the desk. "Mustang, I need to see if this will even work. If it doesn't..." Roy nodded in understanding. Ed did not need to finish that sentence. He knew what would happen if they failed, and he would do everything in his power to make sure that catastrophe was not the outcome of the day. "Do whatever you have to do," he said, deliberately giving Ed the freedom to act how he thought best. It was a blatant show of trust, and he did not miss the glimmer of gratitude in his lover's eyes. "Is there anything else you need?" Ed looked around the office, eyes narrowed in thought as he gave a shrug. "Chalk, and a wall to draw on. It'll probably work better that way." A frown clenched his brow before he added, "Can you get Winry here as well? She might come in useful." Roy did not even have to speak. Hughes had already picked up the phone to get a hold of Winry, while Fury searched for Chalk. Fallman and Breida were moving filing cabinets, clearing the space needed. For Ed, though, it may as well have been happening in another world. Like a diver taking the plunge, he was already lost in the pages of the book, his fingers skimming the paper as if he could absorb the theories through his skin. Suddenly, as if touched by a live wire, he got to his feet, snatching Chalk from the box and rolling it in between his fingers before getting to work. The lines were sure and firm, unquestionable. Roy watched for a few seconds, fascinated not by the array, but by the intensity on Ed's face. It was as if he lived and breathed the alchemy, as if he understood it better than anyone ever had in the past or would in the future. The office door opened, and Roy tore himself away to see Hawkeye walk in, presentable and professional as always. There were still faint signs of strain on her face, but her expression did not bode well for anyone who questioned her health. Al was just behind her, and his eyes instantly went to his brother. He called Ed's name, but softly, like someone who had interrupted him mid-array before and knew the consequences. Russell was looking around with distrust, an expression that was only equaled by Fletcher's awe. The younger boy was still pale, and Roy realized he was trembling weakly. Without thinking, he pulled a blanket from one of the cupboards and handed it to him, ignoring the older brother's suspicious scowl. We'll take the staff meeting in the office. Al, don't let Ed activate that array until I'm done. It was more of a request than an order, and Al shot him a look that spoke volumes. He was used to stopping his brother's impulsive behavior, and just because he was not a suit of armor anymore, it did not mean his control over Ed had lessened. Closing the door behind him, Roy looked over his staff, forcing himself not to pace the length of his office as he searched for the right words. Breida, you asked what gate Ed was referring to. He began quietly, facing the stocky man and forcing himself to set aside his mask of command. The gate was a device that balanced the energy required for alchemy. It was the thing that upheld the principle of equivalent exchange. Carmine destroyed it. He hesitated, glancing at Mace as he tried to work out how much he could tell them without confusing the issue. By the time it was ripped apart, the gate was more than just a device. It had a divided mind and will. When the gate collapsed, part of what it contained took control of Carmine. The other, weaker piece, hid in Ed. Falman nodded, and Roy smiled despite himself. Havoc and Hawkeye had already known that much from Riders, and while Risa was the soul of discretion, Jean would not have hesitated to tell the others what he knew. When the part that was in Ed was weak, it wanted him to rebuild the gate. Recently, in the past day or two, it has gained strength, and its priorities have changed. He ran a hand through his hair, letting some of his own uncertainty show, knowing the lapse would be forgiven. I don't pretend to understand all of what's happening, but the part of the gate in Ed is now only interested in fighting what is in Carmine. It is about dominance and survival, not about what is best for humanity. Ed is in control of it. Carmine is not. That is why she has been killing indiscriminately. She has been hoarding strength for the time when they have to fight. And that time is now? Hawkeye's question was more of a statement, and Roy suspected she had worked most of it out for herself. He paused, pursing his lips for a second as he nodded. Ed has no intention of taking her on. He plans to rebuild the gate, and will do so no matter how hard the fraction of what hides within him tries to prevent it. Carmine, however, will have other ideas. She is at the mercy of what she harbors, and she will do everything she can to stop him. That's where we come in, isn't it? Fury asked, his voice unsteady but determined as he nodded to himself before looking at Roy sharply. Why not just leave it? If Ed's in control, why not just destroy Carmine and be done with it? As if in answer, the room trembled, almost knocking them all to the floor. The pictures on the wall clattered and thudded alarmingly, and Roy thought he heard someone outside the door swear in surprise. The rumbling growls of the tremor gradually lessened, leaving them looking around nervously as the building seemed to sigh, still standing but obviously beginning to suffer from the strain. Cracks cleaved their way through the plasterwork, and Roy wondered how much longer it would be until someone overrode Hakuro's orders and evacuated the place. The earthquakes are happening because there's too much energy in Amstris. There are thousands of alchemists, all using transmutations, and there's nothing controlling the power. He said quietly, ignoring raised voices from the next room. It sounded like Ed and Russell were snapping at one another, but there were no noises of pain, so he assumed that no one had been hurt. If the gate isn't rebuilt, then we only have a day or so before the world shakes itself into ruins. He glanced out of the large windows at the view of the city, sulking in the rain. It was hard to think that, by tomorrow, it could be nothing but rubble. The boss is the only one who can do it, isn't he? Havoc asked, a cigarette pinched between his fingers as he fiddled with it nervously. It's all down to him, just like it was when he tried to get Al's body back. We can help him this time, Roy said quietly. Ed might be in the middle, but it's not his problem alone to solve. I won't order you to do this. I don't feel that I can. But Ed cannot rebuild the gate and fight at the same time. He needs some form of defense against Carmine and her thugs. She needs to be distracted while Ed does what he must. Silence was his only answer, and he could see the flicker of thought across every face. There was doubt and fear, but at the same time an unspoken sentiment lingered between them. Ed was one of theirs, and they never left anyone behind. One by one, Roy's men nodded, giving their support. None of them were going to be idle spectators to the events of the next few hours. They would be part of it, for better or worse. Ed's creating an array to get to the place where the gate was first built. He needs more information before he can even attempt it, Roy explained, falling easily back into the role of commander. As soon as we have a plan, you'll have your orders. Understood? Agreement was a strong chorus. They had all been given their choice, and now that they had made it, no one would give themselves any room for doubt. Roy watched them file out of the office before he let his shoulders slump, closing his eyes as he prayed he had not just allowed them all to choose their deaths. One small mercy was that, while they knew what would happen if they failed, no one had asked the cost of success. At least he had been spared explaining that the alchemy may well cost Ed his life. He was still in fierce denial, and being forced to reiterate Ed's clumsy explanation of his fears would have been more than he could bear. With a sigh, he lifted his chin, giving his office one cursory glance before he followed the others into the outer room and stopped, stunned by the array that had taken shape on the wall. Ed was lost to it, oblivious to the people who watched him with such interest as he chalked lines onto the plaster. Winry and Al were watching carefully, and when the young woman glanced in question in Al's direction, he just shrugged. The design may have been beyond anything Al knew, but that did not mean he was not trying to understand his brother's work. Fletcher sat in Breida's chair, staring in fascination as Russell leant against the desk, his hands curled into white-knuckled fists at its edge. Sharp eyes met Roy's, and the younger man quirked a doubtful eyebrow, pressing his lips into a thin line. It was clear that he did not trust anyone in military uniform, but the alchemy held him in its sway. However much he hated being on the military base, he could not tear himself away from the array, taking shape with each sweep of Ed's hand. Finally, Ed stepped back, rolling his shoulders as he took in the whole of the design. He was scowling as he checked and double-checked the balance of it. "Will it work?" Roy asked, giving a faint smile as Ed looked over his shoulder and blinked blearily, realizing that everyone had been watching him work. He scowled, no doubt annoyed at being the object of their curiosity. "If it doesn't, we'll never know. It'll probably blow away most of the city." "It uses that much power?" Fletcher asked, ignoring his brother's warning look as he leaned forward, his face full of excitement and interest. Ed hesitated before nodding, and Roy felt his anxiety increase as he replied, "Yeah, it's meant to be able to connect two places that are far apart, so you can travel quickly from one to the other. But no one's ever done it before. I don't think they've even tried." "Can you afford to lose that much energy?" The question was a valid one, and Roy watched Ed purse his lips doubtfully, his shoulders shifting as he struggled to find an answer. In the end, he just drew in a deep breath, letting the chalk fall to the floor as he stepped within arm's reach of the design. "There's only one way to find out." Carefully, like someone reaching out towards a wild animal that could bite or maul, Ed brushed his fingers against the outer line of the array. The response was instantaneous, and a warm wave of power washed over Roy's skin as it surged inward towards the wall. Ed's eyes were closed, his head bowed in concentration as alchemy poured from his fingertips, flesh and steel alike. The external circle was steel-edged white, while the inner lines and symbols were darkness-given life, glowing like night and day. It seemed that he was not alone in sensing the strong pull of energy. Al, Russell, and Fletcher all watched Ed as if they could not take their eyes off of him, staring in an intent effort to comprehend what was happening as the light began to intensify and the plaster was lost under a wave of diamond-edged darkness. Al's expression was confident as always, certain and sure of his brother's abilities, but Russell was defensive, already angled to protect Fletcher from any harm. Everyone else watched warily, not understanding what was happening, but trusting nonetheless. They could not feel the sluggish pull and twist of heat over and through their bodies. They were blind to the alchemy, too removed from it to sense its presence. But they were still captivated by the sight of it manifesting within the array. A spasm of shock rocketed through Roy's body as he felt something give. It was as if Ed held a team of rearing, plunging horses, and somewhere, one of the reins had snapped under the strain. Even at this distance, he could feel it whipping through the array, a loose tether amidst the web of alchemy that Ed clutched in his hands. The urge to rush to Ed's side and slap his hands to the periphery of the array to somehow share the load was almost overwhelming, and Al must have had a similar thought, because he almost took a step forward before common sense overruled. Roy met gray eyes with a small shake of his head. Neither of them could help, no matter how much they wanted to. In Ed's hands, the alchemy was tamed and controlled, but any unfamiliar touch was likely to overwhelm them, breaking down the physical barriers of flesh and bone in its fury. Ed was the only one with the strength to do this, and a bead of sweat trickled down his temples as his brows snapped together in a frown. His fingers were braced against the wall, the muscles in his left arm standing out as he fought for supremacy and pushed against the accelerating burn of power. If he lost control, it would all be over. They would never know it as dazzling death took them in its clutches. Roy looked around as the air resonated with a low, humming note that made the glass in the windows chime in response, and the lights flicker uncertainly. The power welled up again, rising like blood from an open wound. It filled the array to breaking point, spitting and hissing furiously as the power echoed back and forth, unable to discharge. On the back of Roy's neck, fine hairs stood on end, and his skin prickled with greasy static as the air seemed to fall deathly still. The calm before the storm. Suddenly, the alchemy drained, pushing all of its enraged energy into the transmutation as it finally took hold. Roy felt his knees go weak with relief, his body no stronger than a rag doll as the world seemed to rush inwards, focusing itself onto the small piece of wall that held the design. Plaster and brick melted away, vanishing in clear, neat strokes until the entire array was a hole into another place. A soft breeze teased through the opening, sweeping across Roy's face and bringing with it the scent of sun-baked stone and balmy shade. The portal opened onto an old courtyard. Paving stones were cracked and worn, and a dry fountain stood silent in its center. From what he could see, some of the buildings were still in one piece, but many had fallen to the ravages of natural disasters, or had been worn away by the passage of the millennia. "Where is that place?" Winry asked quietly, craning her neck to get a better look as the dry air brushed her neck back from her face. "It's just some ruins," Ed said quietly, but his voice was melancholy, as if he were recalling a time when it was so much more. "There's an array there I need to look at." He bent down, idly picking up the chalk and tossing it into the opening. It sailed through, bouncing off the cobbles on the other side, and coming to a halt at the fountain's edge. "You're not going anywhere on your own, Full Metal," Roy said, in a voice that made it clear that it was not a matter open to debate. "This city may be in ruins, but that doesn't mean it's harmless. Give me 5 minutes." Ed looked like he wanted to protest. Roy could see the flash of irritation in his eyes, and he knew it was not necessarily at the delay. There were too many deaths and injuries on Ed's conscience for him to willingly let another person walk into danger at his side, when Al's body was nothing more than a hollow metal shell without the vulnerabilities of flesh and blood. His presence on assignments had been an acceptable risk. Now there was no one Ed could trust not to get hurt. Even the strongest and most intelligent people made fatal mistakes, and Roy knew that Ed could not bear to see another person he knew and cared for slip away because of his actions. Roy raised an eyebrow, waiting for the inevitable argument, but none came. Instead, Ed looked to one side, his gaze lingering on the open space that led into Babylon, before he gave a grudging nod of acceptance, as if Roy's order was a request. Fine, there's nothing dangerous there anyway. It's probably safer than Central right now. Deliberately, Roy kept his aggravated sigh in, holding it tight and fast in his chest. All he wanted to do was make sure that Ed had all the help he could get. He did not care if Ed would rather sideline everyone for their own protection. That was not how this was going to be. From now on, he was not letting the younger alchemist out of his sight. When Ed had retrieved Al's body 2 years ago, Roy had been left in the dark. Whoever said ignorance was bliss was a fool. The wait was agonizing. Not knowing what had become of the Elric brothers had made every day a bitter war between hope and fear. Never again. This time he would be there, whatever the outcome. Hughes, I need you to stay here. If the earthquakes continue, then the army will be called in for emergency rescue and aid. Make sure that no one sees this. He gestured to the wall. Breida, get Armstrong. He'll either be on base or at his family estate. We'll need him. Roy hesitated, his whirling mind trying to think of every eventuality. Out of the corner of his eye, he saw Ed approach Winry and scribble on a piece of paper. He handed it over along with something else, and the young woman looked down at it before nodding her head, straightening her shoulders with pride at something Ed said. Havoc, look after Miss Rockabell and the Tringhams. Don't let them go through to the other side, whatever happens. Roy noticed the sour look Russell cast in his direction. He had not missed the open, hungry curiosity in the young man's eyes, but this was not some exploration. He did not have the time or inclination to be running around after a load of teenagers in the remains of an ancient civilization. Al will be coming with us, because I don't think he'll stay behind. Hawkeye, you're with me. The blonde woman nodded, her sharp brown eyes already surveying the constrained view the open array had to offer. Her gun was not in her hand, not yet, but every line of her body was alert and ready. Despite Lamia's attack, she seemed strong and sure, as unflappable as ever, and Roy found himself grateful for her consistency. "We won't be long," Roy said to Hughes, who simply nodded in understanding. He did not bother to question whether going through to Babylon was a good idea. Not necessarily because he agreed, but because he knew Roy would not change his mind. They had worked together enough times when events conspired to drop them both into more trouble than they could cope with, alone. And Mace knew the drill. His job was to make sure no one realized just how far Roy was willing to bend the rules to achieve his goals, immediate or distant. "Be careful," he said, green eyes sharp and focused. "If we need to call you back, we'll send someone through. Don't be more than an hour. Stodd's secretary has already promised you an appointment as soon as he arrives." "Are you coming or not?" Ed demanded, standing with his arms crossed as he waited at the edge of the portal, bathed in the lingering glow of the alchemy. He sighed in annoyance and stepped through as simply as if it were an open doorway, already wandering off into the dusty streets as Al called out for him to wait. Wordlessly, Hawkeye gestured for Roy to proceed, her gun drawn to defend the rear, as he approached the array, and, gathering together his courage, stepped through. He expected to feel something, some trace of a difference, but it was simply as if he had stepped off of a train. The scents of the office faded, replaced by the hot fragrance of the desert. The city itself had sunken into a hollow, and cliff walls framed the broad blue sky. The sun was already high, and Roy realized that they must be far to the east of Central. Looking back, he could see the office wavering, as if seen through a heat haze. It was a glimpse of reality and an incredibly dreamlike experience, and he felt reassured that the portal had remained open. He had expected this place to be dead, but it was far from it. Flowers clung tenaciously to the stone, their petals open and their leaves cupped to catch the light. Insects chirped in the sweltering heat, and the song of the wind was a constant melody through the gaping windows and doorways of the remaining buildings. An eerie, holy hush permeated the streets that had once been bustling with life. Everywhere he looked, there were signs of civilization, Broken bowls and coins gleamed, harbored in the desert's palm and sheltered from the clutches of the sand. There were even twin ruts where chariot wheels had worn their mark into the road. It felt as if the disaster that robbed this place of human life had occurred only the previous day. It was a living grave, the last testament of a people that the modern world knew nothing about. Ed walked as if he knew the way, as if he had strode these streets every day for years. His expression was haunted, and Roy wondered what it must be like to see this epitaph of a city through the eyes of someone who had once called it home. Ed hesitated by the fountain, his hands clenched into fists at his sides as he stared at the stone, a bleached skeleton of a monument. Eventually, he blinked and turned away, but in his wake a glimmer of light lingered. A clank and gurgle interrupted the peace, and Roy tensed his fingers to click as Hawkeye's gun snapped up, trained carefully as she sought out a target. Slowly, as if stirring from a deep slumber, a trickle of water spilled from the fountain. It grew in strength until its chattering filled the air, an echo of life that once was. Around its rim, those arrays that remained whole gleamed in the sunlight, sparkling with power. Al stared at the fountain, and then looked after his brother, who ran a hand down the side of one of the buildings absently. On the rooftops, where the hardy, rambling creepers had made the hanging gardens their domain, Roy could see the occasional array spring to life. They gleamed like stars as they transmuted water from the air, pulling moisture into the sparse earth. It was as if Babylon was slowly awakening, a ghost of its former glory, stirring at Ed's touch. "He looks like he's sleepwalking," Hawkeye said quietly, giving the fountain one more distrusting glance before focusing intently on Ed. "But he knows where he's going. It's as if he's been here before."
"And the city recognizes him," Roy added, before correcting himself. "Or something in him."
He sped up his pace until they were on level with Al, a few steps behind Ed's heels.
"There's nothing to worry about. This place is already ripe with alchemy. Even though the arrays have been dormant, there's a lot of power loose in the air."
"Old power," Al murmured thoughtfully. "What's coming into Central is hot and bitter. This is dry. It's been here for centuries. I bet that's why everything's so well preserved." He scuffed at the sand with his toe. "After thousands of years, there shouldn't be anything left, but it's all still here. Brother's just acting as a link between the energy in the air and stone and putting it into the arrays."
"Without even touching them?" Hawkeye asked, raising a doubtful brow.
"I don't pretend to know how these things work, but I did not think an array could be activated without being in contact with the alchemist."
There was no answer to that. Even before this had happened, Ed had a tendency to rewrite the rules of what could be done with alchemy. Now, Roy got the impression that there were no limits, especially in Babylon. It was as if, ever since the gate had been built, this city had been somehow bound up in alchemy. It was a slower, sated feeling in comparison to the bite and burn of power that lingered elsewhere. There was no urgency or desperation or hunger, just a steady existence, as if the energy had always been here. They walked into a large stretch of shadow, and Ed turned his head, looking up at a building that rose above the rest. Stark branches of trees loomed from the roof, as if a grove or orchard had once grown amongst the terracotta peaks. From the looks of it, the plants had died long ago, and the sand and sun had bleached and petrified the gnarled wooden remains. Even in ruin, it was possible to see the wealth of what looked like a palace. It was hard to imagine that this place had once been a living, working metropolis, with rulers and beggars, merchants and priests. Now it was a silent graveyard, and the only thing that walked the streets was the ghost of alchemy, coiling in the shadows and basking in the sun.
"This way," Ed said quietly, turning away from the palace as if he could not stand to look at it. Gold eyes glanced back, and Roy saw the sadness that galvanized the younger man's determination.
"There's a square in the center of town. That's where we need to be." Every footstep echoed, bouncing back and forth between the walls of empty homes. Dust skittered down the street as a rough, dry wind stirred. The closer they got to the square, the more Roy felt the need to turn around and get out. It was as if something was pressing him back and pushing him away, and he did not miss the fact that Al was glancing nervously around and Reza's gun was twitching erratically, pointing at invisible targets. Only Ed seemed unconcerned, walking on at the same dreamer's pace. Now the buildings were shattered, broken things. Crops of stone raised to trip them, and soon enough there was little left other than rubble. They were forced to pick their way over it, treading carefully as they fought to scramble across the uneven ground. After what felt like an age in the sweltering desert heat, the debris gave way to a vast city square, paved with smooth sandstone. Around its edge, oil bowls stood, dry and dark in the sunlight. At the far edge was a raised platform, and cropping from that like a small coffin was a dais, stark and bare and brooding. There did not need to be bloodstains to tell the story of its purpose. The altar was for sacrifice, and Roy knew that this was where the gate had been built. Here was where alchemy had been born. But it had not been a glorious creation. It was steeped in blood and death, ruined before it had even begun. For all the good that alchemy did in the world, the darkness of its roots could not be denied. Here the stillness in the air had a malevolent edge, and he had to force himself to keep walking. With every step he could feel the atmosphere thickening, and a glance down made him stop, a choke of alarm catching in his throat. Smooth, sweeping lines scored their way underfoot, forming massive curves and etching huge marks into the pale stone. It was impossible to make it out from this angle, but he could feel it like an open trap, waiting to snap closed around his ankles. Worse, the lines were glowing with a faint, sullen gleam, angry and loathing. Before he could cry out any kind of warning or order a retreat, the darkness rose up, obscuring everything. Sun and sapphire sky vanishing beneath its cloak, and the air was a hot fist around his throat, squeezing tight. He could hear the rattle of Reza's gun in her shaking hand, but she did not fire a shot. He tried to click his fingers, but they would not obey. Instead, his arms hung uselessly at his side as night enveloped them all. Abruptly, with a sound like cannon fire, the darkness receded, chased away by the flickering light of the oil bowls as they burst into life. A sick crescent moon crested the sky, and the air was cooler, kissed by night as the stars shone. The perfume of flowers and fragrant spice lingered in the air, and thousands of whispering voices hushed through the square. Men and women and children stood shoulder to shoulder all around them. They conversed in a language that Roy did not know, and he could still understand what they were saying. There was fear and anger in their words, along with righteousness and disbelief. These people were searching for guidance. They were looking for someone to solve their problems, and, as if magnetized, Roy found his eyes drawn to the dais. A priest stood in his robes, eyes shut in pious reverence as he prepared himself to speak to the masses, and a woman was slumped at his side, bound, gagged, and staring at the man with utter hatred. On the altar lay a boy, drugged and limp in his chains. His tanned face was pale, but his dark eyes were open and staring straight at Roy, coal-rimmed and glazed with fear. His lips moved, and even though there was no way the words could have carried across the babble of the crowd and the distance, Roy could hear them loud and clear. "This is where it all began."